Ditto monkeys beware. Here's more of Bart Cop Radio.
Today is the 5th. It's the day that the Baker Group released their little report on Iraq, which is, what a hand job. They get these, 10 or 11 people together, and they study the war, and after, 90 days, however long they've been at it, they come together and they issue a report. They said, hey, this war is fucked. We're all in trouble. Ain't no way out, which everybody knew. Guess what, dudes? Before you got together, hello, we knew long, long, long time ago. Hell, if I was a better searcher, I could find out when we started calling it the Bloody Quagmire. It was 2003? Earlier? I don't know. But eventually, everybody comes around to our opinions. You know, it's like reading BartCop.com. It's like a newspaper in the future. It's funny to see him now floundering around. Now that the war is such a... Remember, it's only been 90 days ago they were saying, hey, the Iraq war is great. It's doing fine. No problem. Bush is doing a great job. You know, that was 90 days ago. People are still saying that. Now they're saying, well, it's not my favorite. You know, they're starting to hedge a little bit. And now they're even moving to the point, well, invading was the right thing to do, but they might have handled the after invasion a little better, which is a bunch of horseshit. So I'm reading this op-ed thing in the USA Whore Today. It's written by Michael Rubin. He is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, which has to be a whore organization. It just has to be. When you hear this guy, when you hear his words, he's got whore written all over him. Iraq was undercut by naive faith, not in diplomacy. Ready? Iraq was undercut by naive faith, not in democracy, but in diplomacy. By Michael W. Rubin. The W is for whore. As U.S. troops entered Iraq, President Bush promised freedom and democracy. Rather than establish a stable democracy, today terrorists and militia tear the country apart. After billions spent in the sacrifice of 3,000 U.S. troops, it is a right to ask whether democracy in Iraq was not a fool's dream. Isn't it written stupid? Shouldn't it be, it is right to ask whether democracy in Iraq was a fool's dream? I don't know why they threw the nod. You know, I got this thing. I'm starting to get a little pissed off with the double negatives. People send me emails, and it just takes me extra time. You read a sentence, and you got to go back. You know, it's like you pick up a magic marker, and you cross through all the knots. And if there's an even number of them, that means it's a yes. And if it's an odd number of them, that means it's a no. But I resent having to go back and count all the knots in a damn sentence to figure out what the hell the guy's saying. Why don't you just say what you want? Don't tell me it's not a good idea to not go to the store. Well, that means it's a good idea to store. I mean, why don't you just say that? What's wrong with people? Too many people in this country get paid by the word or by the hour. I'm certain of that. Dumb sons of bitches, they use 35 words to say, hi, Bob, I'm going to the store. That takes them 35 words. What's wrong with people? Okay. It was not a fool's dream. Ah, right there. See? Major whoredom. President Truman faced some... No, this isn't President Truman. But we're going to read it. President Truman faced similar questions about Korea. Critics accused... Well, now what? Critics. Now what does that mean? Democratic critics, Republican fascist Nazi bastards, the general at large, the big newspapers, you know. Pretty easy to go back 50 years. Oh, here's what they thought at the time. Well, who thought? Anybody can twist anything. Christ, you go back 50 years... Pretty much, I mean, if you're an old guy, you might remember 50 years ago. How many people listen to this lived through World War II? I dare say not a whole lot of you. I know a few of you have, but there's just not that many of us familiar with Truman and his policies. Okay. President Truman faced similar questions about Korea. Critics accused him of embroiling America in open-ended war, ignoring his generals, losing touch with reality. They said democracy was alien to Korean culture. Time proved them wrong. Any juxtaposition of nuclear North Korea with democratic South Korea shows the value of Truman's policy. No, it doesn't. You can't say Truman and Korea is the same as Bush and Iraq. Korea didn't have 20 million hand jobs ready to kill themselves to get rid of the pig-footed Americans that stepped on their sacred sand. They don't even have sand in Korea. What's wrong with this guy? Bush was right to liberate Iraq. Objection! He was wrong to invade a comparatively paradise to what we have now. If you go next door and you murder the father, you murder the guy who's supporting the nine kids, now it's incumbent on you to feed the nine kids. That's what we got here. You don't just show up and murder the guy next door and then tell his kids, find yourself some dinner. No, we got to go find him dinner now, George. We got nine extra mouths to feed, and we can't afford it. Dumbass. Bush was right to liberate Iraq. Saddam Hussein had started two wars. Well, now wait. Did he? I know they had a war with Iran, but I don't know who started it. He asked George Bush's dad permission to invade Kuwait, and he said, well, sure, you go right ahead, my good buddy. And so he did. Okay, he did that. He used chemical weapons and subsidized suicide bombers. Well, no, wait. He used chemical weapons that he got from us and subsidized suicide bombers, just like the Saudi royal family does. These people that pick and choose, I just don't like this. Obviously dishonest. Oh, we had to invade because he subsidized suicide bombers. Say, well, so did the Saudis. Well, they have oil. Well, Saddam's got oil. Hello. If you're arguing oil, holy water, why do you bring it up? Again, maybe he's getting paid by the damn word. He claimed to have weapons of mass destruction. Oh, that's why we invaded, because he made a claim. What if he claimed he had a 15-inch pianist? Would we have invaded then? Sanctions had collapsed. Containment failed. Objection! Sanctions had collapsed. I disagree. He was selling, he was rifling a little bit of, skimming some money off his oil for food program. Well, hell, he's the dictator of the whole country, dictator of the third biggest oil supplies in the world, and he managed to skim. The amount that Bush stole in the last 5 years is smaller than whatever Saddam stole. I don't care. I just don't care. It probably dwarfs what Saddam stole by 100 times. I'll bet Saddam doesn't have the panache to pull off a robbery the size of what the BFEE has done. Containment failed. Objection. I don't think it did. Who did Saddam invade since we put the sanctions on? Nobody. You know something else, you lefties, getting on to Clinton for the sanctions. Clinton was governor of Arkansas when the sanctions went into effect. And so what do you want him to do? Become president and then reward Saddam for invading? Reward Saddam for gassing the people? Clinton couldn't do that. People kill me. The left are so ready to hang Clinton. So ready. And even after all his crimes and murders and rapes and tortures and invasions and bugging your phones and reading your mail, they stick with their guy. Yeah. But no, Democrats, we can't do it. With military action inevitable, objection? My God, dude, you just write words down like they mean something. With military action inevitable. Yeah, I guess with Dirt Monkey in the White House, I want to be a war president. Hey, Daddy, can I be a war president? Sure, son. Just go up there and fuck with Saddam. With military action inevitable, the White House was right to pursue democracy. That is so stupid. With military action inevitable, the White House was right to pursue... They didn't pursue democracy, they pursued oil. What's wrong with you, Michael W. Rubin? The W is for whore? Are you stupid? Why didn't we invade Cuba if we're out to spread democracy? Oh, that's right. Cuba don't have oil. Bush don't smoke cigars, so why would he invade a country that's got nothing he can use? Cynical realism created Saddam. No, I think the CIA did that. No, I think Saddam shot himself into power and then the CIA got in bed with him. Iraqis who fled their country, meanwhile, had no problem accepting democracy. What? Iraqis who fled the country, meanwhile, had no problem accepting democracy. Well, what does that mean? Is there some bizarro Iraq where all the people that fled got together and formed a democracy called Iraq? This guy, that W might stand for where'd you get your brain? Iraq's problem was both its rule of law and its dictator's unaccountability. Oh, so Saddam should be accountable, but not Bush. Boy, what a nut. Michael W. Rubin, hand job. What went wrong? Iraq's transformation was undercut by a naive faith, not in diplomacy, but rather in diplomacy. Ready? What went wrong? Iraq's transformation was undercut not... Ready? Iraq's transformation was undercut by naive faith, not in democracy, but rather in diplomacy. Instead of securing Iraq's borders, Bush accepted Syrian and Iranian pledges of non-interference. Well, that means he's a damn idiot. You don't do that. How do you invade a country and not secure the borders? Think about robbing a bank. You and your partner go in a bank, and you whip out your guns and you fire a couple shots in the ceiling and say, Mother Stickers, this is a fuck-up. and then people start walking in all different doors. A bunch of people walk in on your robbery. No, see, it doesn't work that way. Not that I've ever robbed a bank, but if I was going to rob a bank, first thing I'd do is bring enough people to secure all the doors. How in the hell are you going to rob a bank? You're saying, hey, lady, put the bills in there and all that. And while you're doing that, people are walking in the building. They walk in and see, hey, the guy with the mask and the big gun that's standing on the teller's counter, that looks like a problem. I think I'll turn around and leave. I'm a foot from the door. You know how you stick your head in the door and you think, oh, fuck, there's a guy with a gun. You turn around and you leave. They're screwed. So if I'm going to rob a bank, first thing I'm going to do is count the doors, and I'm going to bring at least that many people. Now, see, if old Bart, Oki with his IQ of 64, drinking tequila, if I can figure out how to secure the place I'm invading, why couldn't Bush? Why couldn't the generals? Did Bush order the generals don't secure the borders? You don't do that. To this day, the borders aren't secure. What's wrong with him? Now, even the peaceniks, wouldn't it make sense if we had to put another 60,000 troops in Iraq to seal the borders? It seems like it makes sense to me. Seal the borders. You got hand jobs. Any monkey with a pickup truck can drive to Baghdad, I assume, stop along the roadside C4 stands and pick up enough C4 to blow yourself up once you get to town. Another little sidebar. Why the hell don't they partition Iraq? I don't know how you do this or if they tried this, but you cut Iraq into maybe 16 sections and you put up roadblocks and you don't let the people go through. If, you know, they can't have C4 spread out. Probably they don't have it spread out equally in all 16 sectors of the city. It's probably concentrated in one or two sectors. So once you slam the doors, maybe allow just foot traffic between the two. You don't allow trucks or however you work that out. How are you going to police the whole city? The perimeter of the city is not protected. The perimeter of the country is not protected. Well, yeah, it's what you call got problems. Didn't the reason we lost in Vietnam because the North Vietnamese were endlessly being resupplied by the Chinese, and, you know, we were unable to cut that off. Isn't that a fact? I don't know my Vietnam history, but you would think the biggest problem in Vietnam was you don't have the guy cornered. If you got a hostage situation and the guy's got one of those Star Trek machines, we can call up food and water and guns and ammo and, you know, anything you need. Well, yeah, you got a problem. That's the problem we got in Iraq. We can't stop the violence because they've never secured the borders. Stupido! Okay, back to this Michael W. Rubin. W stands for horror. Bush accepted Syrian and Iranian pledges of non-interference. And again, what an idiot. You don't go around... Oh, remember right after the first Gulf War, nobody in the first Bush administration thought to make flying of helicopters part of the surrender deal? They said, okay, you can't do this, you can't do that. You gotta leave your planes on the ground. Saddam said, okay. I mean, like he had a choice. We had a gun to his head. We said, sign here. He said, okay. Nobody thought about the helicopter. So the minute we leave, he jumps in his helicopters, goes up to the Kurds and wipes them all out. It's like, oh, sorry, dudes. We kind of forgot. That's why, 200,000 of you are dead. Because we forgot. Sorry. Well, is there anything stupider than a Bush? Bush believed the canard that Iraq's neighbors sought a stable, secure Iraq. Both countries exploited U.S. trust. Oh, yeah. That's Bush. Always too trusting. Yeah, that's it. Then to win U.N. support, the White House defined itself as an occupying power. No, we don't do anything to get UN support. We tell the UN to go fuck themselves. Bush don't care about the UN. Overnight, liberation became occupation. No, there never was any liberation. You don't show up and liberate. We show up and occupied. This guy knows that, but he's a whore. He can't tell you the truth. Overnight, liberation became occupation in Iraq. Iraqi Democrats, small d, became collaborators. With who? I guess with each other. To appease Paris and Berlin, the Bush administration justified insurgent rhetoric. What does that mean? We never tried to please Paris or Berlin. What does it mean Bush administration justified insurgent rhetoric? What does that mean? I guess the insurgent rhetoric would be, fuck you, go home. So yeah, Bush's presence there justified that rhetoric. He didn't do anything to please Paris or Berlin. Iraqis embraced democracy. You're right about that. Oh, ain't nothing them Iraqis like more than democracy. But the wrong kind. The UN experts sold the White House an election system based on party slates rather than on districts. Oh, there's a distinction lost on me. Any system in which politicians are more accountable to party leaders than constituents, though, encourages ethnic nationalism and sectarian populism. Well, I think that's true in every place, isn't it? I mean, when's the last time your representative or senator did something with you in mind? They do something with them in mind. I think that's what you call being a whore politician. Add malicious to the mix and the rest of, and the result, ready? Add malicious to the mix and the result is explosive. No, failed to guard the 2,000 tons of C4. That situation is explosive. Why didn't they do that? Bush is so worried about his precious oil that he's stealing. Think of it. I've said this before. 140,000 troops. You got, what, 20 of them in Baghdad and the other 130? 120, they're out running around guarding the damn oil. Why didn't some of them guard the C4? Would have made a lot of difference. Be 1,000 fewer dead soldiers if they did, but no. Got to protect the oil. Oil's number one. Iraqis greeted U.S. troops as liberators. They did? I don't think I remember that. But the Bush administration fumbled the occupation. No, Bush fumbled that. You know, I hate that. And if you notice, I do this on the page. Anytime, they, except Robert Perry, I don't mess with his words because I just, you know, I don't want to get a letter from him saying, dude, don't fix what I said. But everybody talks about the Bush administration believes this. No, Bush believes that. You know, I'm not saying he gets the credit for thinking up these wild-ass ideas or the invasions or the tortures or anything, but don't act like, you know, it's like the White House decided. No, and Washington didn't decide either. Fucking Bush decided. Why can't people use the right words? You know, when you say the government raised your taxes, no, they didn't. Bush did. What's wrong with people? Use the right damn word. And the Democrats to this day, they don't call it Bush's war. Somewhere, I think it's on McLaughlin that you're probably going to hear some of during this show. They call it Bush's war. And I'm like, thank you. I'm standing in my living room applauding. Thank you. It's Bush's war. That's what it is. But the Democrats, Kansas, Mr. Rove wouldn't like it if we mentioned that. Okay, closing out here. Iraqis greeted U.S. troops as liberators, big lie. But Bush fumbled the occupation, blaming democracy does not address. Who blamed democracy? Nobody blamed democracy. Michael W. Rubin, the W is for whore. Nobody blamed democracy. Did anybody blame democracy? Did you hear anyone blame democracy? I didn't. Did you? No, you didn't, because nobody fucking did. Blaming democracy does not address the cause of strife. Rather, it absolves policymakers for poor decisions and implementation. What the hell are you talking about? Okay, when you blame democracy, you absolve policymakers. That would be Bush. Well, who the fuck is blaming democracy and letting Bush off the hook? Maybe Michael W. Rubin, the W stands for whore. Nobody else I know is. Well, you're a Republican fascist, you're Fox News, you're Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, they're all blaming democracy and absolving Bush, but nobody else is. Too much is at stake, not only for Iraq, but also for U.S. national security. If policymakers, he means Bush, learn the wrong lessons. Well, Michael Rubin, what did you say here? You said it was the right war with the botched occupation. Well, it doesn't make any damn sense. We had no reason to invade in the first damn place. Now, once you say, oh, yes, we did, well, you know, your trolley's off the track, so we can't have a conversation. Once you say the sky is red and the sun comes up in the west, I mean, once you're there, how are we going to talk? Michael Rubin is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Prostitute. Yep, that he is.
Surfers of Waikiki.
Space!
Merry Christmas.
There's a story I couldn't tell you last show, or maybe the last two shows. And before I tell you, keep in mind it has a happy ending, at least so far. It might sound a little weird as we get into it, but it has a happy ending. Back in July, I'm sitting there working on the computer, and all of a sudden, I hear the weirdest noise coming from the next room. I know it wasn't Mrs. Bart. She was in the room, but she doesn't make noises like this. It sounded like a lamb going, baa. That's my best lamb impression, but I thought, well, that's an odd thing to hear from the next room. I could tell it wasn't recording. Got those good ears. So we went in there, and it was the little kitty cat. Her name's Goldie. She was clawing on this little, we got a little piece of throwaway carpet that was just sitting there, and she just started clawing it like crazy and made that weird sound. And we thought, that something's wrong. That's not the regular sound. Kitties aren't supposed to sound like a lamb. So she was due to go to the doctor, so we made that appointment. We get to the doctor, and they said, Goldie's lost a whole lot of weight. Has she been eating right lately? And we thought, well, apparently not, if she's lost a whole bunch of weight. So they said, well, what we need to do is give her a sonogram and see if there's any blockage or problem or anything. And we said, okay, let's do that. And they said, well, of course you can't do that today. You got to come back in a day or two. And, you know, yeah, all right. I'm sure it would take 6 or 8 hours to do a sonogram. But if you don't have time today, fine. We took her back like 4 or 5 days later. And they said, she's lost another half a pound. Now, we're talking about a 10-pound kitty when we started. Before she started losing weight, she was 10 pounds. Then she went to maybe 7.5, and in between the first and second visit, it might have been a week, she went from 7.5 to 7 pounds, and she said, this cat is losing weight like crazy. You've got to do something. And since they ran the sonogram and everything was okay there, she said, what this cat needs right away is exploratory surgery. And I'm thinking, oh, geez, the little kitty needs exploratory surgery. So didn't have much of a choice. She scheduled the surgery for the next morning. So we didn't even ask how much it costs. I mean, what are you going to do? They say your cat needs surgery. And if you know Mrs. Bart, you know there's the cats and then there's me. So I didn't even ask how much the surgery was going to cost. So we said, okay, let's go with the surgery. Next day, and they told us it was going to be a little incision. Little, if you talk about 9 inches on a 7-pound cat, that's just, God, when we saw it, it was just heartbreaking. They had to shave her entire stomach. And they cut her from her nether regions up to about, I don't know, maybe her sternum. And we're like, oh, God damn. So the doctor closes her back up, and we go get the kitty, and he said, I don't see a problem. Her kidneys are fine. Her colon is fine. Her stomach is fine. There's no cancer. There's no blockage. There's no nothing. We don't have any idea. We don't have a, you know, my luck with doctors has always been, hi, I'm a doctor, and I don't have a goddamn idea what's wrong. That's been my experience with doctors, and it continues to this day, even with the kitties. And you know, now she's down to 6.5 pounds, and he's saying, you got to do something. You got to do something right away. This cat's going to die. You're at the jumping off the cliff point. You better do something right now. Gee, what do you suggest, Doc? We've already done the sonogram and the exploratory surgery. As a matter of fact, he said it was the cleanest colon he'd ever seen. Swear to God, he said that. I was like, oh, gee, thanks, Doc. We'll give her a plaque if she survives. So we said, what's next? They said, well, as you know, I'm in Tulsa. He said, in Stillwater, where I think Garth Brooks went to school, Stillwater is where they have Oklahoma State University, and they have a veterinary clinic there where the kids, whatever, you're going to college to be a vet, they make you do this 24-hour intern thing. So they said, if you take her to Stillwater and sign her up there for kitty intensive care, then they'll, first thing they'll do is put a tube in her and start force feeding her. And but the other part is they'll watch her 24/7. If she's got a problem, you know, they'll just check her all the time, every couple hours or whatever, all 24/7. They'll check her and see if there's a problem. So we get her up there. Didn't ask how much that costs either. Oh, by the way, the exploratory surgery, that was like $1,000, of course. So we get her up to kitty intensive care, and they said, that'll be $150 a day. And it's like, geez, what, can you hurry? I'd really not take a couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks to find out, you know, just do something now. So anyway, they stick the tube down her nose, and they start force feeding her. And they called, you know, they called every day and said, here's how she's doing. I mean, we can't stay there. We can't, you know, camp out. Can't get a hotel in Stillwater and go check on the kitty every couple hours. So they call with updates. They said, yeah, she's taking the tube okay. She seems to be doing all right. But that didn't last too long. They said, yes, she's gaining weight. You know, as time went, a couple days went by, she's gaining weight, getting stronger and all that. But then they called and said, she's stressing out. You really ought to come get her. Oh, I forgot to tell you the weird part. If there was time, I'd write out a little outline and do the part two before I did part three. When he did the exploratory surgery, he said, yes, she does have a little, you know, a couple nuggets she'd like to push out. Sorry about all this, but it's germane to the point. She's got a couple nuggets that maybe she ought to push out, but she hadn't pushed them out. So we'll give her enema. All right, fine. enema didn't work. I never in my life have heard of an enema that didn't work, but he said enema didn't work, so we gave her a second enema. And what that means, basically, they ended up doing three enemas and got nothing for their trouble. The vet looked me right in the eye and said, Bart, she's just an obstinate cat. She doesn't want to give us this victory. And I'm thinking, doctor, that is so weird. You're saying my cat's so stubborn that you can't make an enema work. I've never heard of that. That's just very odd. So we take her to Stillwater, and she still hadn't done anything yet. She's in Stillwater for days and days and days, and of course they got her in a little cage, and they're monitoring 24/7, and she's not giving up anything. And they said, gee, that's unusual. So after several days went by, I don't know, 6-7 days, they called and said, you better come get the cat. She's stressing out. And I said, well, did she ever do number two? No, never did any of that. And, well, look, how long can a 7-pound kitty go without doing number two? And they said, well, we don't know, but you better come get her. Which to me, you know, doctors, another thing, they will not look you right in the eye and tell you any goddamn thing. They'll say, oh, options are limited, or, you know, they start giving you all this song and dance. They don't want to tell you anything, because when they're wrong, then a guy like me is going to say, hey, you said, so to prevent that from happening, they never say anything ever. So they said, come get the cat, she's stressing out. And what that meant was, intensive care, you know, the oncologist doctor, the one that we first brought her to, she said, I have no idea, you better do the exploratory surgery. Took her to that vet. He said, hey, there's nothing wrong with the cat. Maybe it's a tumor. She's got a tumor in her head, and her tumor shut off her digestive system or something. And then so she's backing up so she can't eat. Well, great. So I'm stumping every doctor in Tulsa. So we're taking her to the pros in Dover. We're taking her to Stillwater to get the experts. They said that maybe they'll do an EKG. I'm, oh, jeez. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? The kitty's meow. You got to, you know, you can't say, gee, what'll it cost? You just say, okay, do it. So anyway, they had her. They ran all these tests. Oh, guess what? Bart, this test came back negative, and that test came back negative, and this test came back negative. And it's like, well, I don't need a list of 600 tests that came back negative. Tell me which one came back positive. None of them did, Bart. But she's stressing out. Whenever we get near her now, she's just and clawing at the people and all that. And I didn't know this, but apparently when kitties get real stressed out, they start foaming at the mouth. So great. So basically when they said, you better come get her, what they were saying is, you're taking the kitty home to die. And it's like, oh, great. This is going to be a fun month. We're going to sit there and watch the cat starve to death. Oh, big party. Great. I mean, not only do I got to put up with that, but Mrs. Bart, like I say, that's the problem. You know, I like the cats too, but I like Miss Bart a whole lot more. And if the cats are doing bad, she's doing triple real bad. So we bring the kitty home to die, and it got so bad where I had to call the vet and said, nothing, the cats, we don't have visitors. You know, we don't have people over for dinner. It's just me and Mrs. Bart. Now and then, sure, someone will come by, but the kitties, when the doorbell rings, they're gone. They're under a bed. We don't see them for hours. So they're not used to any kind of people. So if we ever take them anywhere, they figure we're going to the vet, and they just start screaming, just constant. I don't know if you ever heard a cat scream constant, but you put them in the little whatever container and take them to the vet, and they just scream the whole time there. And it's kind of mildly annoying, but the idea that, please don't do this. Don't take me to the evil doctor. Don't let him do all this shit to me. I just didn't think I could drive the cat in that condition to the vet to put her down. I've done that once before back in 92 or something when we lost the first cat. I drove him to the vet and he was quiet, and that was, you know, heartbreaking, as you can imagine. But at least it wasn't, please don't push me in the oven. Please don't push me in the oven. I mean, that's what I would have had if I'd put the cat in the car the one last time, the driver the last 8 miles or whatever to the death chamber. What it is, the cat will just sit there. She might go, once a day or something, but just, she's not apparently not racked with pain. So we thought, well, we'll just take the kitty home and enjoy her final days. And then when it gets bad, I asked the vet, can you send someone by to pick up the cat so I don't have to, you know, go through that ordeal bringing her down there? And they said, okay, that'll work. Just let us know when you want us to come. And the one vet said, you know, there's one thing we haven't tried. And I thought, well, yeah, tell me. This might be a good time. No, I gotta wait till she's dead, then bring it up. There you go. Good thinking, doctor. But he said, I'm not telling you to do this. But he said, I had a patient, had a couple of cats. I don't know how you get two cats in this condition, but he said he had two cats who wouldn't eat. So he would bring him into the bathroom. I'm going, oh Jesus, what's he going to say? And he said he would light a joint. And when he was done with it, he'd let the kiddies out and they would go eat. And I'm thinking, get out. Oh, another thing. We tried all this stuff. The doctor said, put some Metamucil in their water. You know, maybe, we to this day don't know what the situation is, but we thought if she's not eating because she's backed up, if we release the pressure, then she can eat again. Okay, so we put Metamucil in their water, but then she wouldn't drink it. So then we start, now we're force feeding the cat. I have to be the doctor. The doctor said, well, gee, don't know what to do. And I said, well, hey, doc, last time we had a starving cat back in 89 or something, the cat wouldn't eat. So we got a syringe without the needle, packed it full of baby food, turned the cat upside down, and squirt of baby food in the cat's stomach. I did that for a couple of weeks, and then the cat started eating again. Cat lived another 3-4 years. So I said, hey, doc, what do you think? I force feed the cat with a syringe. He goes, hey, that's a good idea. Well, gee, doc, what did you do in medical school and vet school? Did you study ways to save a cat's life? Why am I coming up with the ideas? Finally, this marijuana idea comes up, and I'm thinking, hey, think about it for a second. As the cancer patients will tell you, when you smoke pot A, you get hungry. B, you get to keep your food down. C, sometimes it gives you cotton mouth, which would make you want to drink more water and get the Metamucil on there, stool soft, etc., etc. And we tried other things. He said, well, here, put some, believe it or not, they have a thing called Cadillac laxative for a cat. So he said, put some of that on her paw and she'll lick it off. So we put some of that on her paw and she went around the house wiping it on the furniture. Good thinking, doc. Great thinking. So anyway, everything we tried, nothing's working. They sent the cat home to die. Mrs. Bart's in a pile. Those of you who went to the Tequila Fest in September said, Bart, where's Mrs. Bart? I said, well, she couldn't make this trip. I mean, I didn't want to get into the whole thing. She's not going to leave the house and come home to a dead cat, not for a trip to Vegas. She wouldn't do that for a trip to see anybody. No way she's leaving the dying, starving cat at the house by herself. So that's why Mrs. Bart didn't make it to the Tequila Fest. She's at home force-feeding the cat. So, finally, we get this marijuana idea, and luckily I'm a criminal. I know where I can score some. So we blew some smoke in the cat face. I'll be goddamn if the cat didn't start eating. Isn't that the craziest damn thing in the world? All their fancy years of medicine, all their years in college, all the studies, on and on and on. And the answer, at least temporarily, blow a little smoke in the kitty's face, wait about 20 minutes, crunch, 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 kitty's eating. Probably a longer story than you wanted to hear, but I promised that we had a weird August, and I couldn't tell you the story in August, because if the cat died at the end of August, and then we go to Vegas in September, and I didn't want everybody at the party to walk in, Mrs. Bart, how's them cats doing? And then she burst out crying 30 times, you know, that wasn't going to happen. So, I promised you an explanation of the kitty, and that's what we got. So when in doubt, if you have a medical problem, I suggest you go right to the marijuana, skip the doctors. They don't have any idea what they're doing. Every doctor I've ever seen, gee, Bart, what could it be? Remember, oh, geez, about 8 or 10 shows back, I had a sore throat for like 45 days. And the doctor said, well, hey, wonder what it could be, Bart. Well, yeah, fucking you went to school, asshole. Why don't you tell me what it is? He sent me to the ear, nose, and throat specialist. And he said, oh, you got these idiot doctors. He said, what happened is your lower esophageal sphincter is weak, and so you got your stomach acid flopping up into your esophagus, and your upper esophageal sphincter is probably weak too, and so that's getting into your throat and giving you a sore throat. You know, you idiot. So he said, here, take some Silex or some Prozac or whatever that stuff that's always on TV that prevents stomach acid or whatever, and I ate that for 4 or 5 days. That didn't help a goddamn bit. Not a bit. Not at all. It's like, you idiot. The regular doctor doesn't have a clue, so he sends me to the specialist. He doesn't have a damn clue. Nobody has a clue, ever. After like 45 days, it went away. Anybody remember the old Beverly Hillbillies? Jed told the banker, Mr. Drysdale, that Granny had a surefire cure for the common cold. I mean, the Clampets were always honest. They were absolutely, if Jed said this can happen, then it happened, you know, because they were backwards, Oklahoma values, country people, wouldn't lie. And when Jed Clampett told Mr. Drysdale, we've got a surefire cure for the common cold guarantee works every time, works absolutely every time, has for, you know, grannies, whatever, 80. It's worked every time for 80 years. So Mr. Drysdale sets up this whatever apparatus, the granny's secret potion or something that makes the common cold go away. And at the end they said, well, okay, Bobby's got a common cold. Here, we're going to, let's cure him. And he said, well, here you go. And they gave him a teaspoon of this stuff. And they said, now what? And they said, well, now you wait 8-10 days and it goes away every time. Well, that's what we have with my damn sore throat. If you wait 45 days, it goes away. Well, great going, Doc. You're a genius. All that money you spent at medical school, money well spent, doctor. Okay, so closing up, didn't mean for this to go so long, but if you have a medical problem, I recommend you bypass all the doctors, go straight to the pot. God sent us the pot to help us through our problems, you know. Gives you the cotton mouth so you'll drink. Hell, it may have digestive powers. We'll say it does. My medical opinion is worth more than the doctor's, trust me. One other thing I should add to that, to get the cat high, I had to smoke something. So you might think it's a lot of fun to wake up every day and smoke something and then try to make it through the day, but no, I'm a busy man. I don't know of anybody busier than me, and when you get high, it's hard to get a lot of shit done. So that was probably the biggest single reason we didn't get the show number 100 before we got to Vegas, is because I can't talk so well when I'm high. I can't talk so well when I'm straight, but when I get high, it's even worse. You get high in the morning, you blow some on the cat. Get high in the afternoon, you blow some on the cat. You know, cat goes and eats. That's the good news. But the bad news is your kind of work day goes to hell. So hard to get a lot of work done when you're high. Don't know if anyone ever told you that before, but trust me, it's true. The things I do for these damn cats.